A very, very good morning. We haven't spoken to you for way too long. How are you?
Howard, thank you very much. I'm good, but a wee bit tired. I had a meeting at 7 o'clock yesterday, and it finished at 4 o'clock this morning. So other than that, I'm good.
Oh my word. 4 o'clock. That was not a meeting.
That was a Pesach Seder.
That wasn't. It was a Purim festival.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So Lubit, let's, can we connect Purim and Human Rights Day?
I think we can, but the challenge we have is that, from the way I look at it, is that, Human Rights Day, part of the meeting yesterday, we're joined by a lady who's a human rights activist. And, somebody was saying, it's Human Rights Day tomorrow. And she was saying, no, it's Sharpville Day, not Human Rights Day. So for her, human rights kind of diluted the message of the day, you know, rather than remembering where it came from. And I think for many people, look, I'm one of those people who I didn't know until someone said, oh, next week Thursday is a public holiday. And I just took it as it's a public holiday, but why, what day it was, I really couldn't be bothered. And I think that's the challenge. Whereas if you look at Purim, it is about the salvation of the Jewish people, and certainly nobody stumbles upon Purim. So you do know what he's celebrating. So I think they have the same message, but I think one is less remembered. So I think the message around Purim is still strong. It's managed to survive literally 2,000 years, whereas we've diluted in 20-odd years. Whatever message was behind
that is so interesting. It is so interesting that you say that, because I mean, Zanati was saying the same thing earlier, just before the show started. She said to me, "Howard, just what is today?" And I said, "Purim." She said, "No, I know it's Purim. obviously, I know it's Purim." But I said, "It's Human Rights Day, and it's sort of just not part of our consciousness anymore, yeah. And it's only been a short period."
It has, but it's amazing how quickly we've forgotten it and just moved on and accepted it as a holiday. And why it's there, we don't care. And I think that's a tragedy because, you know, for this lady, she's somebody who's a journalist who wrote, who had been in prison. So for her, it was real. There was a sacrifice in getting the freedom. Whereas for many people, there wasn't a sacrifice and they really couldn't be bothered. And I think that's the real tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. But how do we take something like that, like the Sharpeville massacre, and make it relevant today? And of course, it was very, very relevant, and it was highly relevant during the remaining years of apartheid, because it became a symbol of brutality and symbol of suppression and a symbol of all sorts of things. But then after 1994, the question is, how does it morph into something a little bit different that we can still relate to?
You know, Howard, my sense has always been that in South Africa, we're always very tentative about celebrating anything. So there's always this age-old problem that we don't want to taint the youth with the negativity that comes from the past. So we kind of, you know, are never sure. So we never throw ourselves into it and say, you know what, we had a horrible past. There was a Sharpville massacre. This is what it's about. This is what we're remembering. So I don't think we are intentional in teaching the younger generations and reminding ourselves. So we kind of remember it, but push it into the back of our consciousness and say, we don't want to forget this day. So I think for me is, if you look at Purim, it's certainly something that's celebrated, but I've said this with any Jewish holiday, you know, whether it was Pesach or whatever, but, or, you know, leaving Egypt, it's there. It's that, you know, there's a liturgy that you can read and it's celebrated. Now, if you ask many people Sharpville Day, what does it mean? They can, you know, maybe half of them would say, I remember Sharpville. This is maybe what happened. But the events leading up to it, what happened to the day, is not very clear. So I think we'd have to be intentional from a government point of view, let's say art and culture, whatever, to say, this is the day, this is what happened. We're not, you know, opening old wounds, but we need to remember the path to our freedom. That is not being done. So it's left to you, Howard, or to myself, to try and remember it in our own family circumstance and to tell what we know or don't know and how little we know. So I think it's kind of haphazard. There's no structured way. My introduction to Purim was very interesting because I did, you know, from a Christian point of view, I'd never heard of Purim, but I certainly understood the story of Esther and what had happened. So I'd read that many times in the Bible, but never the celebration. So the first time I think I went to a Purim party, I was quite confused because I thought it would be quite a somber occasion. And so when I pitched up there and people were in costumes and, and alcohol was flowing, and I was like, am I at the right party?
That's very so funny. Wow.
So I was quite confused about it. But in the end, I got to the spirit of it and I got to understand it. But as wacky as it may seem sometimes, the message is still very strong.
What is also perhaps fascinating, and Lubo, I'm interested in your view on it, is could it be part of the reason that the Jewish festivals have endured to the point that they have is because there is such a prescribed ritual around all of them. In other words, Human Rights Day is a day that we have in our minds and we memorize it, but we don't. They're not physical things that we do. I think we've often spoken about on Heritage Day, you know, now it's become about a bride. It's more Bride Day than Heritage Day.
Yes.
And I'm not even sure that that's bad, because then that becomes a symbol of the day, whereas Human Rights Day is a bit up in the air and theoretical. David, I want to bring you in here to that. What's your thought on it?
Absolutely. I think for me, you've hit the nail on the head, Howard. I think when it comes to a common consciousness around how we respond to an event or to a day, I think that's exactly what is lacking, you know. And I think, you know, some people might be worried that it's prescribed. You know, this is what you have to do to remember. This is what you need to do. But I think, you know, human nature really revolves around a structure, a predictability, a consistency. So if there is, a message out there that says on Human Rights Day, this is what as South Africans we are going to be doing, people have got a framework to work around, traditions to put into place. And I think that makes it so much more easier as a commonality to come together to celebrate and to remember. And I think it's got to do with human nature and, behavioral science, if you want, to make it
but
more.
But may I say though, gentlemen, you see, here's the thing. I may be wrong. I'm not a biblical scholar, but when I read the Bible, You have the book of Esther, but there's certainly no prescription in the Bible to say, remember this day and remember it in this way. But if you take the case of, let's say, Pesach, for instance, when you read through Exodus, you have the situation where Moses is told, you know, remember this day and this is what you must do. And when the future generations and children ask, this is what you shall tell them. So my view is that we had the incident with Mordechai and Esther, but somebody in the Jewish community, let's say the rabbis or the elders, decided we need to celebrate this and this is how we're going to do it. That's why I'm saying that's the intentional part.
Well, just to correct you on a few things there, Lubek, within the book of Esther, there are certain things where it says, for example, Ma'atanot le'evyonim, you're going to give gifts to the poor. So there are certain things that are prescribed there. And then, as you rightly say, then the rabbis went and said, well, because of this verse and because of that verse, we're obligated to hear the Megillah twice during the day, etc. But indeed, you know, this was something that had to be codified, because it isn't clear. It doesn't say rule. These are the five things that you have to do. It had to sort of evolve to that or be prescribed, so that became the accepted practice. So I guess
I'm with you, Howard. So what I'm saying is that, you know, there was certainly intervention to say, let's be deliberate and we need to celebrate this. How do we celebrate it? So when you look at Human Rights Day and our holidays, there isn't that same degree of intention. We agree that we need to remember this particular day, but how exactly, it's left up to you completely. And I think that's the part where democracy loses things, because we want to be open about it and say, well, celebrate it in the way it makes sense to you. And the way that it makes sense to somebody is to almost dissociate it from the reason that the day existed. And I think that's where we've diluted it terribly, and it's lost meaning. I mean, I can tell you now that if I were to phone my kids in Cape Town and wake them up, I'm down the road, by the way, in Melrose, if I had to phone my kids and say to them, what's Human Rights Day, they wouldn't have a clue what it's about.
Yeah, but you know, the part of it that offends me is that you're in Melrose and not in studio, Luba Mayakisa. But if you did get to bed at 4 o'clock, then we'll let you
off. I thought about it, but I promise you, my friend, you know, I don't know how I would have managed to drag myself there. It was a miracle that I'm up this morning.
Right. Well, that's a, Purim is indeed a day.
So how are you celebrating?
So how am I celebrating? I'm going to go from the show to Shul to hear the Megillah, and then we will deliver Mishloach Manot, and everybody will get dressed up, and then we will go to a Purim function at one of the shuls. So yeah, it'll be a great family and social day filled with lots of ritual.
You know, where I've struggled, but I might be stirring some controversy here, because I know when Purim people would dress up in all manner of costumes, they would drink, and I would always laugh and say people would kind of dress in whatever way they want, and you could put on a dress or whatever. And I always say, but there's a part in the Bible about how you should not dress in a particular way, you know, and dress in the opposite, you know, gender's clothing. And then I would say, but it's interesting how almost in Purim everything is suspended, you know, and you can do almost whatever. And then after Purim, you come back to yourself again.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's a very, very strange day, but and it's an incredible thing, because David, as much as it's an outward celebration, it's happiness, it's dressing up, it's a bit of alcohol and it's feasting. It's actually, because of the outward, it actually makes it quite an introspective day, because you have to know what mask you wear. You have to know who you are to know what mask you're wearing, don't you?
Absolutely, and I think that's the fascinating part about it, is that. Yeah, there's so many emotions, you know, wrapped up in one day. I mean, here we are eating Hummus Tashen, which are delicious. And then we are reading the Megillah, where we are talking about persecution. But then we're dressing up, which seems to be, you know, just a way of expressing ourselves, and especially the children coming in and just having a blast. So it is. It's an absolute mix of emotion.
But here's the question, has the celebration evolved in any way? I mean, when you look at your own lifetime, or even before that, the way it's celebrated, has it evolved? Because I sometimes find, when you look at things like Human Rights Day and other holidays, generations, as things move forward, we kind of turn things and make it, you know, different and celebrate it differently, or does it retain the essence, you know, throughout the ages, like, let's say, for instance, Shabbat has?
Right. I actually think that Purim has retained it. I don't see very much difference. Jenny says the reason that Purim, I think that Purim has prevailed, is more about the fact that we live with anti-Semitism in every generation. So that's an interesting comment. It's maybe because we are so often reminded of it. I'm not sure. It's a very, very interesting. It's interesting. And the message from generation, says Jenny, the message from generation to generation is consistent with the rituals that are part of it.
You see, for me, I mean, I don't want to get super spiritual about this, but the message I've always taken from when reading the Book of Esther has been the case that if you don't do something else, then God will find somebody else. The end will be achieved, but not through you. You will not be part of it. So it's always been the issue of, if something needs to be done for a people, if you don't do it, then somebody else will. So that's always been my ethos. So when I got involved in Israel advocacy and lobbying, I've always understood it that it doesn't depend on me as a leader. But it's not as if I've somehow got the magic bullet or the person that will transform things. But I have a role to play. But if I don't play it, somebody else will be found to play that. And therefore, I'll be negligent of my duty. So I've always seen it more as being encouraging you to say, play your bit. You've got to do something. Whereas when I look at holidays like Human Rights Day, whatever it was, it's almost a historic message. Something has been done, now remember and celebrate it. Whereas for me, the message of Purim is almost like a continuous message that remains relevant. That, so like your the person who sent you a text was saying, anti-Semitism is there. So for me, the advocacy, this is still a continuing battle. Yes. You know, there was the historical incident with Mordecai.
Right, but it's still as relevant today. And the issue of hidden miracles and God involved in the world, but not necessarily being revealed, that's also part of a consistent message. The power that we have is a consistent message. Esther and Mordechai changed the course of history, or of Jewish history, certainly, and that's the power of the individual. So these are timeless and universal messages.
Exactly. Whereas now, when we look at Human Rights Day and everything, we're almost reflecting and looking back, as if that was a point in time that we've cut off and we're merely remembering what took place. Whereas with Purim, it is challenging me going forward and saying, you know, there was this particular incident, but the challenge remains and the challenge goes forward. So I'm dealing with more of a continuous living episode rather than something historical stuck in a moment in time that I can look at or ignore.
David, your thoughts?
Absolutely. I think for me that's the point, is how do we make it more relevant to our youth, to us today? How do we translate it into our everyday lives? And I think, as you're saying, you know, a lot of the chagim that we have those messages that we can relate to, that we can use here and now. And I think also what makes it easier, and I think the beauty of a lot of what we do in Yiddishkeit, is that it's so predictable. It happens in the same order every time, every year. So it gives us a sense of predictability around it. And there are very often very set traditions around and laws about what we can do together as a community. And so it's not only, and I think on different levels as an individual, what we can do as an individual, what we can do as a family, and what we can do as a community. So there are wonderful guidelines to bring a commonality to a chag, you know, and I think for me, what's important is it doesn't negate that if you want to do something individualistic, you can absolutely do that. But I think maybe that's what's lacking, when we talk about these, like Humans, you know, Rights Day, we don't have a common kind of way of, as South Africans, to celebrate. And I think maybe it is that fear of, you know, we're going to prescribe and we're going to tell people how to feel and what to do. But I think, you know, human nature, we want to celebrate together. We want to remember together. And I think, that's what's lacking. We don't have that common thread, which doesn't negate the idea that we can also,
because Human Rights Day should be something that is timeless.
Absolutely.
It should be a concept that endures.
But again, as Luba says, and I agree with him completely, is how do we relate to something that was so significant that happened in the past and make it so relevant to what we're experiencing today? And again, I think that common bond, that common tradition, that commonality that can bring us all together is an important thread as a basic start, and then we can evolve from there.
You see how David hit it, you know, on the head, because ask yourself this question and say, if you were to fast forward 20 years from today, how much would people actually remember of Sharpfield Day? And I don't think very much, because
people are not even remembering it today.
Yeah, so I'm saying if you go back 20 years, so even within a 100-year period, you're going to get to a stage where there's almost very little remembrance, because now it's still alive because, one, you have people who remember the day, and people who lived through, let's say, apartheid and so forth. So hence I'm saying if we move to, let's say, 25 years from today, and then another 50 years in total, I think it's going to be a distant memory. And there lies the problem, because we're not intentional. And I think it's part of the problem of democracy, is that you're trying not to offend everybody. You're putting it there and saying, well, make of it what you want. And so you can't complain when it fizzles in time. Whereas if you take Purim, what David was referring to, and what, you know, the way I was classifying it, is the liturgy is saying, this is how you celebrate something. You may deviate from it, but at least you have a basic understanding that this is what is required of you. And I think that kind of basic liturgy is what then guides people, because it's not, however I think about it, it's there's some structure. And if I don't know when I go through the liturgy, I know what I'm celebrating. Whereas now, if it's Sharpfield Day, what exactly am I remembering? You know, what led to Sharpeville? I know the massacre, but what were the events leading up to it, and how did government respond?
And why is it relevant to me today? That's always the question, I think, that needs to be answered. If you can't answer that, and of course we know human rights is highly relevant, and this evolution in South Africa certainly is, but how do we bring it home? I think you bring it home with ritual and repeated behavior that our children know growing up, that this is what we did, this is what we do on that day. I do have to leave it there. Lubomir Khisa, thank you as always, and I do appreciate